Friends, welcome to course on microfinance. I am Suresh Kumbhare. Basically, I am an agriculture graduate. Then I had my MSc and PhD in agriculture economics. By training and by education, I am an economist. By practice, I am a banker. I work in NABARD for about 3 decades, and I have been working with microfinance for the last 30 years. I am in this course, I shall be sharing with my experiences, maybe at the field and the training which I got from various literature sources as well as from the books. I shall be happy to receive your feedback through the email which I shall be sharing with you at the end of the each chapter. Thank you. With this, we will begin our course on microfinance. Look to the caption. Basically, it's a microfinance. In the literature, you will find these are in 2 words. I shall be throughout this course, I shall be using this word as only 1 word. Microfinance will be 1 word for me. As far as the financial services are concerned, basically they refer to deposits, they refer to loans, the transfer payments, or we call it remittances. We have the insurance. All these things we refer as financial services. When we talk of microfinance, basically these are the financial services to the low-income households. Now, the low-income households can be defined in different ways, but as far as we are concerned for this course, these are the households having the annual income of rupees 3 lakhs or less than that. Earlier in the literature, you'll find the definition has been given in different ways for rural areas and the urban areas. But since 2022, the definition is same for rural and urban areas, and it is for the households having income of less than 3 lakhs of rupees to whom these services are provided, they are called as microfinance. If we go into little more details, we will realize that RBI has defined as microcredit. Microcredit, these are the basically the loans which are collateral free, and these are provided to the households who have an annual income of 3 lakhs or less than that. And further, these are the households who do not have access to the formal credit. Formal in the sense the credit which is available from the banking system, maybe from the NBFCs, the cooperatives and other sources. As far as this course is concerned, we have about 8 chapters. We shall begin with the first chapter. We shall begin with the chapter 1, which is on financial inclusion. Like this, we will have 8 chapters. I will not be able to tell you all the chapters' names at this stage, but we can go ahead with each chapter. Basically, we shall be dealing with the SHGs, which are called as self-help groups. We shall be dealing with the joint liability groups. We shall be dealing with the National Rural Livelihood Mission. We shall also deal with the microfinancial institutions. We shall also have some kind of understanding about the impact of COVID on the whole microfinance sector. And at the end of the presentations, we shall have some kind of caselets wherein we shall deal with the practical cases relating to microfinance. So let us begin with the term financial inclusion. Basically, this chapter will have these kind of contents. I shall be explaining with the concept of financial inclusion. We'll go into the details as far as the extent of financial inclusion is concerned. We shall also deal with the relevance of financial inclusion. Please remember, financial inclusion is a process and not event. Let me explain you at this stage. Process is a continuous thing. Event may be once for all. But as far as financial inclusion concerned, we shall deal with the process, which will have a kind of, you know, we'll see how the progress has happened as far as this, the financial inclusion term, which was coined in 2005-2006 by the Reserve Bank in its annual report. Since then, the concept is getting a lot of support from the government and the banking institutions. We shall also deal with the barriers in the financial inclusion. We shall also look to some of the initiatives which we have taken for improving the financial inclusion. Basically, we shall deal with these 2 models, self-help groups, which are in short, we shall call as SHGs, joint liability groups, which in short, we shall call them as JLGs. These are the 2 models through which the microfinance is provided to the households who do not have collaterals to offer to the banking system, but they have a social capital which they generate through the networking among the group members. At the end of this chapter, we shall deal with the perspective on the financial inclusion. How I view, maybe for 2024-25, we shall have some idea how about the sector is going to grow. If you look to the picture, it is indicating the fellow is having a bank account. But when I talk the financial inclusion, it's not only having the account. What is important is the use of the bank account, which these people you get, maybe for transfer of payments or for getting the remittances. Something like that should happen. Because most of the times we find that the bank accounts are open, but they are not operated, which are called as inoperative accounts or inactive accounts. If you ask me very honestly, about 1/3 of the accounts which were opened in the kind of target-oriented movement, the accounts have been inactive. Now, this needs to be avoided, and this can happen only if we educate these people about the financial literacy. What the financial literacy means, these people should be told how they can plan, how they can plan their money, where to invest, what is the way to see that the credit, they get it, and all banking products, they have the knowledge of it. They avail the banking products and services for their development. Let us look to the definition. In a sense, the conceptual clarity is very important. The financial inclusion, the Reserve Bank and government, they have taken several steps to promote the financial inclusion. The objective was very simple. Deliver the financial services to the poor. Here the bold letter is very important. At affordable cost. The cost has to be affordable by the poor, because basically these services are provided to the poor who do not have access to the banking system so far. Now we want to bring them into the net of the banking system, and therefore the affordable cost becomes an important thing here. Now when I talk of the financial services, what I refer is basically refer to the savings, I get the credit, we refer to transfer of payments, we refer to insurance and investments too. Because we have to go beyond savings. Something the savings have to be used, and that way is to go for investments. So now these two things you have to remember. One, financial services have to be at affordable cost. These are for the people who have been excluded from the formal financial system. Now this is very important. A large number of people, they are excluded at the moment from the formal financial system. If you put a very rough data, maybe I will put it something like 40% of the people are still outside the formal financial system. Now these people have to be roped in. And when we rope them, these people, we have to ensure that we provide them not only the credit facilities, but also provide the savings facilities, because these people have the savings. We have to also use these accounts for transfer of payments. We have to go for insurance. We have to go for the investment services too. This is what the conceptual clarity was there as far as the financial inclusion is concerned. This is what I explained to you earlier also, that when we talk of the term financial inclusion, it is not only having a bank account, but it's the use of this account. Create a kind of ecosystem that enables these poor and they encourage them to use these financial instruments. Now the instruments, you know, the moment we say the financial instrument, there are two or three things comes to our mind. One is the checks. Second is the bonds, and third is the securities. Now these people have to use these instruments while making the payment, while getting the credit from the banking system, even while paying the insurance premium and making their own investments. This is what we have to take care of it. As far as the types of financial instruments are concerned, we have some kind of cash, we have the derivatives, we have the foreign exchange instruments. We will not go into much detail as far as this course is concerned, but because cash is understandable to us, derivatives are something we relate to the futures market and options. That's what we understand. Foreign exchange is, these people may not have much, but sometimes there is a chance that these guys may have remittances, or they may go abroad and send their money to the family which resides within the country. We'll go to the next slide, where we see what is the extent of the financial inclusion. 2021, there was a global FinTech survey which indicated that 78% of the adult Indians have the bank accounts. Please remember, about 78% of the adults, in the sense I am referring to the people who are above 18 years of age and above. Now this is very interesting. If we look to the temporal thing, temporal, this word I shall be using, so let me invest my minute with you. When I talk the term temporal, means it's over a period of time. Global average, if we look to it, maybe 76% of the people, adults, have the accounts. We are 78, so we compare fairly well with the global average. When I looked at the past data, in 2011, about 35% of the people had the account. So between 2011 and 2021, about a decade's time, we have doubled our extent. In a sense, the number of people having the bank account had doubled between 2011 and 2021. Now, this having an account, as I said, is not important. What is important is inactive accounts. And a Global FinTech survey, which is a global survey, which they say that about 35% of the accounts are inactive. Now, the definition is very important at this stage. The definition says these are the people who have neither received nor made digital payment during the year. Please remember this. These are the accounts which have neither received nor made the digital payment during the period, and that is the area of concern for us. I looked at the earlier survey also, and when I looked to the 2017 survey, because this survey takes place every 4 years, when I looked to the 2017 survey, the extent of inactive accounts had been almost same. Maybe about 35% of accounts were still inactive. That particular juncture, in 2017, the concept was no deposit or no withdrawal from the account in past 1 year was defined as a kind of inactive account. So whether I talk of 2017 or I talk of 2021, both the places my inactive accounts are about 35% or about one-third, we can say very broadly. When I looked at the accounts, the composition of accounts is very important. We have the accounts between males and females. Normally, we expect males have the better access to the banking services. In 2011, the gap between the males and the female account holders was about 17%. Please remember, the gap was about 17%. But in 2021, the gap, there is no gap between the male and the female account holders. In the sense, 78% of the people have the bank accounts which are male as well as female. There is no gap now. We have breached the gap of that 17% which we realized in 2011. Now, this particular achievement, I will put it, this is more towards the PMJDY. Let me elaborate this abbreviation at this stage. It's a Prime Minister Jan Dhan Yojana, which was started in 2014-15, Prime Minister started this. The idea was we should have the more accounts of the males as well as females. And in 2014-15, when we started, the idea was basically to have the accounts for each family to have at least one account. But over a period of time, the concept underwent a change. And now it is said that each individual, please remember, each individual who is an adult individual has a bank account. Now, that's what it is covered under PMJDY. We have something like, 46 crore accounts have been opened in this scheme. Maybe this figure I'm referring to August 2022. And where we realized that 56% of these accounts were of women. This is very important to note here. The large number of accounts were opened of women. And the 67% or something like two-thirds of the accounts were in the rural and semi-urban areas. These two dimensions, we must note it. 46 crores accounts opened since 2014-15. 56% accounts are of women and two-thirds accounts are in rural and semi-urban areas. Now, this shows that we have gone more for the rural areas. We have gone more for the opening of the accounts of the women. Why the government or why the Reserve Bank of India should focus on the financial inclusion? So I have given a caption for this slide. What is the relevance of the financial inclusion? Now, there are three or four things we must get into it. Financial inclusion helps in developing the habit of savings. Ultimately, the savings have to go to investments. Because merely saving in a bank account is not enough, this money has to be invested something. So financial inclusion, the first thing does it, it develops a habit of savings among the people who do not have the access to the institutional credit or they were out of the ambit of the institutional credit. So we are bringing these people into the ambit or in the circle of the banking system. Ultimately, the aim is to ensure that these people join the economic development process of the country. Let me repeat this word. Ultimate aim is to bring these people into the mainstream of the developmental process of the country. By covering these people under the ambit of banking system, the financial inclusion helps me in protecting their hard-earned money, because this money is in the banking system, which is a safe mechanism to save. A large number of poor, they prefer to save in the banking with the banking system, because they know their money is safe. As and when they need, they can get it back from the banking system. Now, these are the two important dimensions. I'll go into the remaining ones also. But for the moment, let us remember, first aim was to develop the habit of savings. Second, protect their hard-earned money, because we provide large number of financial services products to these people. This is what I said. Another thing, very important thing is, by providing the financial inclusion, the third element comes is, we protect these people from falling prey to day lenders. Day lenders are those who harass these people whenever there is a default. Now, it's not a question of only interest recovery. It's a harassment which is very important. So by ensuring the financial inclusion, we protect these people from the payday lenders. In the sense, the money lenders who charge them very high rate of interest, maybe 24 to 30% rate of interest, which is charged by the money lenders. Financial inclusion is the fourth dimension which I see. We provide a variety of financial products and services are provided to them. As I said, maybe remittances could be one which comes to our mind quickly. Or getting the DBT, direct benefit transfer benefit, also people can get it once they open an account with the banking system. The last one, the last point of this slide is very important. There is a need for the financial literacy. People must be taught. Let me give you a small figure at this stage. Hardly 24% of the people are financially literate. I'm making a statement, financially literate. Literacy and financial literacy, these are two small different things. We must get it. Financial literacy helps you to have the idea about the planning, getting an idea about the banking products which are available, and not only getting an idea, but also use these products. Maybe use it for remittances, or get it credit from the banking system, or put their hard-earned money into the banking system in the savings account or with the fixed deposits. And ultimately, even I will make it a small bold claim that these guys, can they go for a mutual fund route so that their savings are plowed back and they go for the investment route. Of course, mutual funds is little in advance. We are putting something more in immediately, but this is going to happen with the passage of time, because it is not only savings. They have to go for the investment route, and mutual fund could be one of the routes to ensure that their savings are used for generating an additional income for these people. What do we do in the, once, as I said, the financial inclusion is a process. This process has two specific tasks. One, this process, as I said, begins with opening of the saving account. But please remember, I said that we go beyond savings, we go beyond credit, we go for remittances, we go for payments, we go for the insurance. That is very important. It is not only credit. It's basically a savings, credit, insurance. Insurance, I'm seeing this particular at this stage, it's a risk transfer mechanism. In a sense, there are eventualities or there are some kind of problems for these people. So they want to protect their lives. Maybe by paying a small premium, they ensure that life in their life, you know, so that their families are not put into hardships. Suppose something if the breadwinner dies, at least the family gets some kind of compensation and they get the money so that at least their life is saved. We go for a kind of, you know, mutual fund services. We go for financial advisory. These are the kind of dimensions I'm seeing once I talk of the financial inclusion process. As I said, there are two specific tasks. One is ensuring that these people get the institutional credit access. Second, those who do not have access, the access can be provided. But second thing, those who have the access to credit, but The access is from informal sources. Informal in the sense, they have the credit from the moneylenders, they have the credit from the relatives and friends. But here, we try to replace these sources with the bank credit. So one, bring these people into the fold of the banking system so that they get the credit. Secondly, whatever credit they have been getting, that if that is from the non-institutional sources, to substitute that non-institutional sources credit by the bank credit, or we call it more as the institutional credit. Now, this is a substitution which is going to happen through the process of financial inclusion. So this is how the things are going to work. Ensuring access to credit. Secondly, ensuring that the non-institutional credit is substituted by the institutional credit. These are the two words you will find when I talk of financial inclusion. They call it a credit widening and credit deepening. The credit widening means I increase my outreach. What I mean is outreach here, it is opening an account covering more number of people in the banking system. So when I talk of widening, I refer to the opening of these accounts. So basically, it is also referred as, in the literature if you go to, it is also referred as breadth, you know, of the financial inclusion, which is basically simple words means increase the number of accounts which are served by the lender. Now, wider spread of the microfinance services is essential so that the sustainability of the institution also is achieved, you know. Now, this is very important. We have to see that our institution, which is providing the credit or deposit or financial services, they are also sustained. They also grow over a period of time. And therefore, the number of borrowers is considered as a kind of outreach or breadth, you know. So one was a breadth, or we call it more as a widening. In simple words, it means opening of accounts or number of borrowers, you know. Number of borrowers is a widening for me. But when I talk of the depth, you know, outreach depth when I talk, what I mean is increase the average loan per borrower, you know. Now, this is very important. The loan could be sanctioned or it could be disbursed. Either way, it can go ahead. But the widening refers to the number of borrowers and deepening refers to the amount of credit per borrower. So these two words we'll have to remember. As far as the credit widening and deepening is concerned, widening, simple words, increase the number of accounts or increase the number of borrowers, and deepening means increase the average loan per account. These are the words which are used very often in the literature, so you must get into it. When I look to the financial inclusion, there are two ways I can look at it. As I said, basically this gets affected by the demand and supply factors. Now, the demand factors and supply factors, we must have an awareness of it, because these factors are going to affect my ultimate financial inclusion. So the supply factor here I means is something like use of technology. Now the use of technology helps me. How? Technology helps me in reducing the cost of transactions. Any adoption of technology helps me to reduce the cost of transaction. As far as the demand factor is concerned, we have two ways here. One, give the financial literacy to these people, create the awareness. Now, how can we create awareness among the bank about the banking products among the poor? One way is awareness camps can be held to create the demand for the financial services. There is one more word which is called very often now, is the digital financial services. This has the potential to address the issue of transaction cost and capacity to reach the last mile. When I say DFS, DFS means digital financial services. This has the potential to address the issue of transaction cost as well as capacity to reach the last mile. Get into little more on this. Ultimately, I want to increase my number of borrowers. We want to increase the number of people who avail these financial services from the banking system. We want to increase. Now, this can be done through the use of technology, and it can also help me to reduce, to provide these services to these people at a lower cost or at a cheaper cost. That's what I mean. So technology is going to help me in cost reduction. Capacity building is going to help my demand factors, which will raise the demand for the financial services. What are the policy changes? A lot of policy changes which happened. As I said, in the concept was 2005-06, the Reserve Bank used it first time. But we'll realize that the major changes have been in recent years. There are many changes, but I'm referring to some of the recent changes which have happened, some of the policy changes. In 2014, Reserve Bank of India allowed the NBFCs, non-banking financial companies, or the microfinance institutions to work as business correspondents. In the sense, these institutions, they work as the agents of the banking system. Now, the ones I say the BCs are the business correspondents, they can handle the cash actually. In the sense, they can receive the money from the clients and they can also give money to the clients. But please remember, they work only as the agents of the banking system. This was the first, in 2014, this was a change which happened. They allowed these NBFCs and the MFI to work as the BCs or business correspondent. Second change which I realized is, SIDBI grounded the idea of certified credit counselors. Certified credit counselors, what they do? They do basically two functions. They prepare the loan application, they submit the loan application to the banks on behalf of the micro and the small medium enterprises, which in short is referred as MSMEs. This enables the banks to take the informed decisions. Now these certified credit counselors, they prepare the loan proposals, they submit the loan proposals to the banking system. If there are shortfalls, they help these guys to complete the formalities and also help the banking system to take the informed decisions. The third change which happened in terms of policies is the Reserve Bank is now allowing these banks to expand the branch network. Very important. First, we have seen that NBFCs were allowed to work as BCs. Secondly, we found that CDB raised the concept of the credit counselors. Third, the change is the branch network is increasing. The CD ratio in the sense, it's a credit deposit ratio of the banking system is going. The credit delivery mechanism for the farmer households is being evolved. At this stage, I will just tell you, something like the joint liability groups are emerging, the self-help groups are emerging. These are the two names we have to remember for this course. The microfinance is provided through two mechanisms. One is the self-help groups, the other mechanism is with the joint liability groups. Both these approaches are popular. Maybe some of these details we shall see maybe with this chapter as well as the other chapters, because there will have a specific chapters on the SAGs, we will have a specific chapters on the joint liability groups, and something more we shall go in. But at this stage, it is enough for us to say that the microfinance is provided through two major channels, self-help groups and the joint liability groups. What is the difference? We shall get into it. But for the moment, at least we should remember there are two channels which provide the microfinance to the poor households. Poor in the sense I am referring to, because these are the households, if you remember my basic concept, I said these are the households who are having an annual income of less than 3 lakhs of rupees. So relatively, these are poor households. This is what it comes at. As I said, there are two approaches. One is the self-help groups and their linkage with the banking system. The other is the joint liability groups and their linkage with the banking system. What are the SAGs? SAGs are basically the small group of people, maybe up to 20 persons. They come together, they come voluntarily. We shall have more ideas about these groups, but it is enough for the moment that these are the small groups of people who come together basically for savings and then for credit. So here the savings is the priority and credit comes later on. What are the basic features of these groups? They are something like, I call them, Saptapadi. They have 7 R. First R is, these people must meet regularly. They will have meetings. These meetings could be something like in a weekly, or could be fortnightly, or could be monthly also. Once they get matured in the sense, once they grow beyond 3 years of age for the groups, they can have a monthly meeting. But initially we suggest them that they must have a weekly meeting, so that the social capital is generated in the process. Social capital in the sense, the kind of exchange of information which takes place among the members themselves. This helps them. This is because this is the network which develops over a period of time. So first is the regular meetings. Second R refers to the regular savings. These guys, they save the money, maybe 100 rupees or something per month. They go on saving. Once they collect the money, they have internal lending now. That's why the third dimension comes, regular internal lending. In the sense, they give the loan to their own members, maybe at a cost. It's not free. It's at a cost. They give the loan to their regular members. But once they give a credit, they get a kind of, you know, their savings. They have something like maintenance of books of accounts, because otherwise they can't remember many things. So what the next R comes into picture is regular bookkeeping. So they also have a regular credit flow from the banking system. To supplement their own savings, they borrow from the banks. So credit could be one. The record keeping is the one. And ultimately, more important is the repayment of these loans. We must ensure that these people who take the loans come back to the system. So the next R is the repayment of loans. Then the next R comes is the regular training. This is very important. This is, I'm calling it the sixth R. These guys, when they regular training, in the sense, they not be, need not be a formal training. But even the informal training, when they come together in the group, they share their experiences. What I mean is, they share their experiences with regard to the rearing of the animals or for raising of a crop or whatever the experience they gained by undertaking an economic activity, they share with their group members. Now, this is very important because sharing of the knowledge helps them to take their own decisions. The last R is very important, and that is called as rotation of leadership in the group. These groups, I said that these are up to 20 members, they can come together, but they must have a rotation of leadership so that the groups, they remain sustainable, they remain active over a period of time. So these I will be calling these 7 R. This will be maybe repetition, we shall have it, but we must remember they have basically regular savings, they have regular meetings, they have regular internal lending, they have a regular flow of credit from the banking system, they go for regular bookkeeping, they have something like the regular training through which they go for sharing of the experiences. And the last one, which I said, is the rotation of leadership, which is very important. When I go into these kind of groups, you know, I realize some of these are the, basically we shall be dealing with the features or some kind of more conceptual understanding we shall develop now. These groups are of women, basically. According to the data which is available with us, 85% of the groups which have been formed in this country. There are about 119 lakh groups in this country. I'm repeating the figure. 119 lakh SHGs are there in the country, of which about 85% groups are of women alone. The government, you know, the government during the COVID period, it was decided to give the collateral free loans to these people. The limit was raised. Earlier the limit was rupees 10 lakh. Now it says it will raise to 20 lakhs of rupees these groups can get, which are collateral free. In the sense, they don't have to offer any formal security to the banking system for getting the loans. Basically, the large number of groups. Now, if you ask me, about 60% of these SHGs, they are covered under the National Rural Livelihood Mission. National Rural Livelihood Mission. We shall have a separate chapter on this, but at the moment it is enough to know a large number of groups, maybe about 60 or 65% of the groups are under the NRLM. Now you will be saying 60 or 65, I am using both the figure, because if I look to my savings account, I get a figure of 60%. If I look to my credit linked SHGs, I get a figure of about 65% of the groups are under NRLM. NRLM in the sense, National Rural Livelihood Mission. In the kind of, you know, when we go for these kind of groups, there is a suggestion on being grounded now that these are rural self-employment training institutes. Rural self-employment training institutes, these people, they impart a short-term training to these people. Please remember these two words are very important. Short-term training is there, but long-term handholding. This is very important. Two things happen, not only training, but also the escort service, or we call it a handholding, which is very important. So this particular training component takes care of the training as well as the handholding, or we call it an escort service. Basically, the concept of SHGs came in 92. That's what I'm saying. 92, the concept, maybe about 3 decades we have completed. And in this group, as I said earlier also, the focus is on savings. So therefore, I'm writing a word, savings precede the credit in this program. Let me repeat this word. This is very important. Savings precede the credit. In the sense, savings are there first and credit follows it. This is how it goes on. This basically, as I said, 85% of the women, the groups are of women. This is only a showing a picture where these people are going for that record keeping, that who is given the credit, how much is the contribution of each person as far as the savings are concerned. So they write their own books of accounts actually. This is the maintenance of the accounts, which is we can see in the picture which is shown there. Basically, they're writing their books. Books in a sense, the savings, how much they have received the savings from each member, how much credit has gone to the each member, how much is the repayment of each member. So they go on recording all the things, you know. Now, some of you may be feeling, why not use a laptop? Maybe a beginning has been made in this country even to provide these people the palm tops or the laptops so that they maintain these accounts in a computerized form, and maybe that helps them to transmit even the data to the banking system more frequently. That is something which is emerging. Now, this is, I will call it, the perspective. This is what is happening manual to something like record keeping through the books of accounts or through laptops or palm tops. What has happened in the 3 decades? As I said, the program has completed something like 3 decades, you know. What did we learn, you know? What is the experience, you know? That's always a question which comes up with any program which is there in the country for 3 decades. What is it we learned it, you know? Basically, I realized that 2 or 3 major things have happened for this program. One, basically this helps me to reduce the dependence of these poor on the money lenders. Or, I'll put it, it helps me to reduce the dependence on the informal sources of credit. Second, which is more important, is empower the rural women. Now, when I use the word empowered, I have a very simple meaning. Allow these women to participate in the decision-making process. So, 2 major impacts. One, reduce the dependence of the poor on the informal sources of credit. 2, empowerment of the rural women, in the sense participation in the decision-making process has improved. Not only in the family, but even some of the SAG members have become the panchayat members. So they have gone beyond the family, they are now in the society, their power is recognized, their participation in the decision-making process is now realized. Basically, what we are saying is, the convergence of SAG BLP bank link, BLP in the sense it's a bank linkage program, with the financial initiatives of the government, what we are saying is there is need for more convergence of efforts between the government, the Reserve Bank, the banking system, the non-governmental organizations. We shall go into little more details about all the stakeholders who are involved in the process, but at the moment it is enough for us to see that we have to ensure the convergence of the various stakeholders in the process. Basically, what we realize is there are some reasons, you know, that why these people go to money lenders. A large number of, even if you go through the literature, even I realize that 85% of the urban poor, they borrow from the informal sources. Why it is so? Why do you borrow? One, they have easy availability, no strict time limit for repayment of loan, no paperwork. Maybe the interest is lower if they are getting a credit from the relatives and the friends, you know. But generally, the rate of interest which is charged by the informal sector is quite more. It is about 24% to 30% rate of interest these guys have to pay. Now, where did I get this? You know, what are the, all these benefits? I have written that this is something like a national level, you know, it's a financial inclusion survey was there, which is carried out by NABARD in 2018. These are the observations which came through their own survey. So I thought I must share with you that basically they avail the credit from the informal sources for 3 or 4 major reasons. Is the easy availability, no strict time limit for the repayment of the loans, no paperwork. They need not, they sometimes only, please remember, they get a cheaper credit only if he is a relative or friend. Otherwise, the rate of interest is 24% to 30%, is what we have to remember.